I am Shusara Kona Kumara. Welcome to Satsang. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine. Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us for Satsang tonight. We're going to go ahead and get started, so take a nice deep breath and I will clear the space. Mother, Father, God, through the Great Central Sun Hierarchy, through the Office of the Christ, through the Order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, Keeper of the Violet Flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one to surround each of us, and I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it.
Actually, take three good ones for me tonight, please. Real deep. That's good. I think we could all use some nice deep breaths. Die. Okay. Well, I know where I want to start tonight. We'll see where it leads. I had something happen in my husband's family overnight, and we lost someone, a young person in the family. And the experience of just, you know, it's watching the energy and just watching the process, people's shock and the sadness and just everything just made me look today at the concept of time of all things. Because of course, a 29-year-old young lady should have had, you know, the majority of her life ahead of her, certainly. And I want to look at it from the space of your journey. So this is where we're going to start tonight. And my question to lead off our session tonight is, what are you waiting for? What are you waiting for? I think when things like this happen, it gives us an opportunity to look and then take stock of our own lives, right? And to certainly recognize that no one is guaranteed anything. As far as time and space go, living in this dimensional reality, you don't know when that moment will be that this particular outpicturing or projection of consciousness will come to its end point. And for those on a very conscious spiritual path, this is important. I hope you all already have an understanding of how important this is. I had a conversation once with my guide, and within the conversation, I was speaking to her from the space of my own journey and the work that I was doing and where it was all leading. And I made the comment to her about my children. Now I have, for those of you who don't know me, I have three children who are now teenagers, but were very, very small when I started this work. And I remember saying, well, in X number of years, my life will change concerning, you know, the space that I'd be in, the availability of time that I would have that I didn't currently have because of my children and whatever other obligations I had going on. And she says, yes, but you don't know what's coming. And I sat with that for just a second, and it kind of really hit me. Wow, like, she's right. I don't know what's coming. I have no guarantee that at the time when I'm supposed to be at a stage in my life where things would have lightened up and I would have all kinds of time available to me to just sit in meditation and do deep self-inquiry, I have no guarantee that that's going to happen. And I had to look at, well, what is your purpose now? And what I knew my purpose to be was to wake up, right? I knew that, or else I never would have ended up in the strange set of circumstances that led to me meeting her in the first place. So it just kind of puts you in a place where you really have to look and go, there's no guarantee. I could be gone tomorrow. And if it's tomorrow, am I prepared for that? Am I ready? Yeah. And that's a sobering thought for a very serious seeker of truth. Because, and very paradoxical too, right? On one hand, is time real? No. Linear time is absolutely not real. It's created by the mind, right? Because the ability of mind in third density to be present is seriously hindered. And we utilize in the fallen state the mind to pull up pictures of the past and project out pictures of the future, which basically just keeps us stuck in the time loop we're stuck in, right? Where we do believe that yesterday existed and tomorrow will come. That's not true, of course, not at all. There is only now. However, and here's the paradoxical part again, to put ourselves in the space where we just say, well, it doesn't really matter because time is an illusion. And if the moment comes of transition, then I understand time is an illusion, so it's all good. Like, that's, it's not enough, you understand? Until the experience is fully integrated, until it is truly experiential, not mental, you are locked into linear time. And so being locked in linear time, we have to, as a seeker, right, we have to look and go, so as far as being on a spiritual path goes, time is actually what? It's working against me, right? My longtime students would agree with that, I'm sure. Because people who truly, truly invest themselves on every level in doing deep, deep advanced inner spiritual work know that this is not a quick turnaround kind of experience, is it? Now, I don't, you know, I'm probably like one of the most sobering teachers out there because I don't think I leave a whole lot of people go, oh, yay, you know, like ascension's right around the corner. But I'm a realist, yeah? Above all else, we do need to be realists here. And this is the reality of it. The reality is you don't know. You don't know. You could have 2 more years. You could have 20 more years. Who knows? Are you prepared today? And if we can say to ourselves, no, I'm not prepared today, and I can recognize that. Are there attachments in place that in the moment of transition, right, instead of surrendering to what is, those attachments will hold the mind stuck and clinging to this reality because of my love for my husband or my fear for my children? Those things will just suck you right back in. Head out and head right back in. In some cases, instantaneously. Some cases not. But if we can recognize, yeah, that would get me. I could picture myself if I knew it was my moment, and they say your life flashes before your eyes. If I knew that and I saw it all, would I be prepared? Could I right now, to the best of my guessing, really, because there's no way to know until you experience anything, right? To the best of my knowledge and what I think I'd be capable of, if I could recognize this was the moment, could I hold my awareness on the divine and on the fact that there never was separation, that I am God? Could I literally leave this reality and that be the only thing that I held my focus on? It's a deep question, isn't it? With everything we have in our lives, all the people that we love, all the fears that we would have for what would be going on without us, you know, am I driving down the street and I'm about to be hit by a bus and all I can think is, oh gosh, the mortgage check has to get in the mail tomorrow. I hope someone gets it, because if not, it's going to be late. And you laugh because it seems ridiculous, but in the moment, where will the mind go, right? It's going to go where the attachments are in place. If you're attached to a lot of fear around money and all the stuff you've had going on financially, you could absolutely go right there. Or to your children, you say you have small children, and have that be the overriding fear at your time of exit. What will happen to so-and-so without me here? I mean, just look at the statement. You don't exit the system when in the moment of exit, that's where your mind is. Understand? Pillion. I just have to call on you. Talk to me about if you have ever in your journey, how many years? Six years? So, I don't know.
I think we're coming up on seven.
Seven. So in your 7 years of working with me, have you ever thought about this?
I have.
Good, good. So what do you think?
I think are you ready? I hope that I have a long time left to go. No, I really have thought about it. And I think if it was a slow death... I might be able to see myself meditate a lot and, you know, kind of try to keep myself there. But if it was fast, no, I know that, you know, I know thoughts like that would come in like, oh crap, I got to pick Anna up from school, you know, or,
right.
You know, like, or, you know, did I forget to lock the door or something? You know what I mean? Or, I don't know, like, I remember when I had my car accident. I remember at the actual time uh-huh. of the accident,
uh-huh.
it was, there really truly was, like, complete surrender. Like, I knew that it was happening, and I had no control, and it was just like, okay. But as soon as the airbag dust cleared, it was like, holy crap. And everything came flooding in as far as, I need to do this, I need to do that, is everything okay? And it just started flying about what needed to be done next and what to check and all that other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like, I don't know.
Yeah, and it's a necessary thing, and I'm not bringing it forward to be morose or anything, but everyone watching this is a conscious seeker. You understand? This is not just your average person thinking about death. You, as a conscious seeker, you have to move into the death process consciously. It's not like, you know, if you look at the Egyptian Book of the Dead and the Tibetan, and they talk of the bardos and everything that consciousness has to move through, you know, it's something that, and it's a longstanding tradition, that there are people who will literally work with the dying person to walk them through each stage, right? So that they can pass every level and achieve freedom, achieve their liberation from having to come back. But one false move in that journey, and that's where you land, and then that's where the level you come back at. So it's a necessary thing to look at and to really think about. And I have students who, you know, some of my students are older, and I'm sure the whole death thoughts have come more frequently than my real younger students, because it's that stage in life where you start thinking about, oh, you know, of course, in our world, do I have enough money for posterity? Do I have enough to leave to my children? Or do I have enough to get me through the rest of my life, or whatever those thoughts are? And you can't help but kind of, when you're looking at, say, retirement or anything like that, look at your own mortality. And that I have younger students with young children, and younger students who don't even have children yet, who may end up with children, who maybe haven't even reached that point yet where those thoughts come. For a seeker, generally, they do have those thoughts early on in life because it's just part of it, but not everybody will. And it's something we really do need to spend time contemplating. You know, it's like you have to be in the world, you have to be vigilant, right? And in the transition from the world, you have to be equally vigilant. Absolutely vigilant. And of course, easy to say, but like Pielian said, in the moment of, and she had a, you know, a shocking kind of accident, you didn't see it coming, and it's like all of a sudden you're in it, right? And in that kind of an experience, there's no way to know how you're going to go into it until you're in it, right? There's just no way to know. But that's not to say that you can't kind of prepare yourself ahead of time for the eventual experience of transition from the physical form, at least by sitting in contemplation of it. It's important. Okay. Any questions about that at all? Anyone? No? All right. All right, Pielian. I love to pick on you. I love having a co-host. So ask me something. Get us going in a different direction.
Okay, ask you something.
Mm.
Actually, can we go back to this?
Sure.
Is that possible? So, you know, you said it's worth contemplating, and I do actually think about it, because I know when that transition happens, I know that either I prefer not to come back and end this whole life-death cycle.
Oh, boy.
I want to try to land as far as I possibly can.
Reverence.
So, like, now when I contemplate it, right, like if a situation comes up and it's like, ooh, what if I died like that? You know, and then I'll start thinking, like, how could that all play out so that I could try to hold that space, you know, during that time?
So how could you control it so that you could hold the space?
No, not control it, but like if it was to happen, if it went down that way, like, what would my preferable, this is such bad wording, but what would my preferable thought process be during that time, you know, so that I don't end up with all these, like, attached thoughts? Because, you know, like I said, with the car accident, in a matter of split seconds, it went from okay to, like, everything was just turning, like, like, you know, like, what I had to get done and what's happening and was she okay? And I mean, like within a matter of seconds, I went from surrender to completely in it.
Right.
You know? So, like, I try to think of, like, if that was to go down, if a certain situation was to go down, like, is it okay to contemplate it in that way where you're kind of thinking, like, how would I feel about that? Like, what would I be thinking? What space would I be in that situation?
Sure. Like,
is that what you mean by contemplate it?
Yeah, well, I mean, that wasn't what I meant, but there's nothing wrong with doing that too.
Okay.
When I was saying contemplate it, I was speaking more to just sitting in the stillness and looking at where I currently, you know, function from the majority of the time. And if I can project myself into that situation, you know, what would be my first thought? And one of the things that's a good marker for that is where are your thoughts kind of, no, they're not yours, of course, but where do they coalesce on a daily basis? Is the vast majority of your quote unquote time spent in the world, meaning your focus is in the world and on the world, or is your focus on the divine? Is your focus on the eternal? And you move through the world and you do what's necessary in the world, but you're constantly, it's almost like, you know, wordless dialogue with the eternal. I know that if you looked at the work of Sai Baba, right? They have a terminology they use, Om Sai Ram, and that would be like a mantra that would be taught to their students, so that is the overriding thought for them. In a moment of anything, the first thing that comes is Om Sai Ram. And so what I'm saying is, I'm not giving you a mantra, but I'm saying that's the thing to look at. Where is it that you first go? Because that shows your propensity, right? The propensity of the individual, where to head. And if the thought is always first in the world, that tells you something. If the thought extends beyond the world and it rests in the eternal, that's a completely different experience. I remember, some of you may know the story, but my guide has told a story, at least to me, several times. And within it, the story itself doesn't matter, but there was an experience in a vehicle, not unlike UPLN, where in a moment, she had literally no control over the vehicle and was with a lot of traffic. And her first thought was, this is it. You know, just this is it. And being completely prepared for whatever was about to happen. But this is it. It wasn't it. But you understand, it wasn't, oh crap, this is it. It was just, here it is. Because it comes, it's going to come for everyone, isn't it? It is. Yeah. Of course, you don't die. It's impossible to die. But this physical form will transition away, sure enough. And you will move through that process. We all will, right? Because who would want to be here forever? I love all those sci-fi movies and everything where they're, the whole goal is to figure out how to have eternal life. And I'm always like, who would want to be here forever? Seriously? Stuck in the money system, stuck in the 40-hour work week for eternity? Yeah, I don't think so. Oh, it's a good question, though. How do you contemplate it? And contemplation as a general thing is so important in your journey. Meditation, of course, is extremely important, right? To become so still and to have a single point of focus so that the energies outside of this level have an opportunity to kind of come in and embed themselves in you. Super important. But contemplation is equally important. And I think it's something that gets very lost on people, on seekers, because everyone is so busy, right? Everyone is so busy, whether it's you're busy with your children or you're busy with your work or you're busy with housework or volunteer work or whatever it is, and the combination of all of it, everyone is so busy. So it seems like an absolute luxury for most people to allow themselves to take time to just sit and to look at something, contemplate it, you know. And I love the word contemplation, but most people read it as thinking about something, and that's really not what it is. You know, I always say you just kind of, whatever the subject matter is, you just kind of let it rest in your hand and just hold it lightly and just look at it, right? And allow consciousness to take that, the totality of that thing, and then show you what's there for you to see in it. If you do it as a mental process, it doesn't have the same effect. But if you can just sit with it and just look at it. And the beautiful thing is you'll notice when you really involve yourself in contemplation that you will have these mental pictures that just kind of pop in, that of course the picture then turns into thought. But these pictures just pop up and pop into the space, and it's like, oh gosh, like I didn't ever look at it that way before. I didn't think of it like that before. And now I can, so let me just look at it, yeah. And contemplation is so important to your journey as a seeker, because it will show you aspects that you can't get to otherwise. Linda, I'm just looking. Linda made a comment. She said, oh, it sounded like PLN was describing the primal embryo. Oh, yeah, absolutely. No question. No question. And in her experience with that accident. No question. Shock. Yes. Major confusion. Denial even, I'm sure denial was there. Yeah, feeling it. This can't be happening. Yeah. Yep. So, you know, but it's everywhere, isn't it? The primal imprint. Everywhere, 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 everywhere. And that's another good thing. Linda, I'm glad you kind of brought that forward, because that's another thing, a seeker, that is a wonderful practice for you to be in, constantly looking for it, right? How is it that we discover in our journey that we aren't our personality? how does that happen? Right? So you're taking consciousness that has been imprinted with a series of states of mind and has been imprinted to repetitively continue this cycle of negative to positive states of mind over and over and over again. And it has these matrices of identifications that all lead to certain patterns within that consciousness being triggered. And so that cycle can run. And we just call that me, don't we? It's just me. It's just who I am. That's my thing. That's, you know, yeah, that's my weak spot. And this is where I, you know, it's just who I am. I'm an Aries. Right? Yes. Yes. But no. Is it true? I'm an Aries, and we can look at all the Aries, and I have Scorpio ascending. I have a Virgo moon. Ooh. So we can do that and say, wow, like, look at that. And you can look at it all and go, wow, that's so you. Is it true? Gosh, yeah, because astrology is an exact science here. But is any of it you? No, 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 no. Right? So you came in, you're born at a very particular time in a very particular place, right? With very particular planets doing what they're doing in the sky at the time. And that's karmic. You landed exactly where you needed to land at the exact moment you needed to land, so that all of the karmic stuff that you were carrying would come forward in this lifetime to be balanced. It's very simple, very simple. That's exactly what astrology is. So the point is, you can utilize astrology, absolutely, but use it to show you where you're stuck. Don't use it as something to identify yourself with. Oh, I'm a Gemini. I can be like really kind of scattered and flight, right? Oh, I'm a Scorpio. I can be really moody. And oh, I'm an Aries. Let's do it now. Let's do it my way. Right? Okay, so I'm an Aries. Let's do it now and let's do it my way. It's polarized, isn't it? Sure it is. Is it a strength of an Aries? Yes. Is it a hindrance of an Aries? You better believe it. So what does the Aries need to learn? They need to learn cooperation, right? They need to learn when to sit back, when to allow for something else to move. That's what astrology is there to show you, how you evolve beyond those signs, right? How do you evolve beyond the things that have dictated the personality in this lifetime? And how do we learn that we're not the personality? Well, we learn it by uncovering the overriding cycle that consciousness is stuck in. Uncovering it and witnessing it everywhere. How individual can you be when the very thing you see in yourself, you now see everywhere you look? Killian, you just had a really interesting look on your face when I said that. You wanna explain that?
I mean, that's a really... I mean, that was pretty profound to me.
Good.
How individual can you be?
Why did it seem profound?
Because it's true. I mean, if you're everywhere, everyone, then you can't be separate. You can't be me.
Yes.
There's no I. Just about every concept you have is like wiped away.
Very true. Yeah, very true. And the, you know, to say we can't be separate is absolutely accurate. However, will that be the experience of someone beginning on their journey when they're at the place where they're starting to see, you know, the imprint everywhere? Well, of course not. Of course not. However, the other thing you said is, I can't be me, is that's it. It's right there. And that's like one of the moments I love the most in a newer student is when they get to that spot and share that with me. I tear up every time because it's so beautiful to see a person who's like, I just realized I was standing there at the Starbucks, say, watching this thing go on between this couple, and all I could see was the imprint, and all I could see was victim, perpetrator, savior. Right? It's like all I can see. And in that moment, it was so personal that it became impersonal. And in it, all I could see was, who am I? Because I see me right there. It's right there. But it's not me. So who is me anyway? Who is me, right? What a beautiful space. Beautiful. Now the ego doesn't like that space for obvious reasons. But what a wonderful space to be in when we recognize that in one sense, we see ourselves everywhere. And simultaneously, we don't see anyone anywhere. Do you understand? You don't see anyone anywhere. Why? Rashonda, are you with me on the last part of what I just said? We don't see anyone anywhere.
And you, did you say why?
Yeah. Why don't we see anyone anywhere?
Because it's the nothingness. It's seeing everyone is that projection or the expression of the all, but then it's also the nothingness when you're seeing. It's no thing. It's nothing. So if there's nothing to see, it's
true. Okay, and that's a little bit deeper than I was actually looking for. So
oh, my bad.
Gold star for you for tonight. Okay. What I was thinking you were going to say, and I'm glad you didn't, so thank you for that. Is that if I see myself in everything, within that, you also see that no one sees anyone because none of it is accurate to who you are. You are not patterned consciousness. You are not states of mind. You are not thought and emotion. Neither is anybody else. Yet, we've got a planet of people walking around identified with all of it. I think I'm my thoughts. So a thought comes in that's guilt inducing and I feel bad because I think I had that thought and shame on me for having that thought. I shouldn't think like that. That was wrong. Yeah. The identification is there. The identification is there with all of the emotion that comes forward. But when you see, it is a cycle of states of mind that is on autopilot, meaning the one mind that shows up everywhere as everything, only needs to utilize, you know, here's this one that's like, oh, this has been running pretty steady for a while, so let's pull in something from over here to come and shake it up a little bit. But when it does, then the cycle can run again. It runs again here, it reinforces it. Beautiful. And if it's running again here, you know that whatever came in, it's running there too, and it just reinforced that. So you see, it's all connected. It's all connected. And I'm sure all of you have witnessed this, right? You see, and I used to see this all the time in my house because I had 5 people in my house, right? So there's a lot to watch. And I used to see it all the time where one person would have something happen. It didn't even have to have anything to do with anybody in the house. One person would have something happen. Let's say they'd stub a toe on a piece of furniture or they'd come home from work having had whatever kind of a day, they're already running. And then you can just watch it. You can watch that they are looking for where they're going to go and hit to get it running somewhere else. because they can't contain it just to themselves. They've got to involve somebody else in their misery. Right? Everyone has seen this. Within that, you see how interconnected it all is. Look at the news, right? You sit down, you watch the news. How many people are tuned into that at the same time from all over the world? And there it goes. There's the trigger. And now the cycle is running for millions of people. And now they're going to take that piece of information and the, you know, they're running, the imprint's running. So now they're going to go out and have to put it up on Facebook or say something to a friend or loved one, get them rolling. Right? It's all interconnected. There is only the one mind, the one higher mind, and then the shadow of the higher mind that we experience here, which is the lower mind, which appears to be multiplicitous, and it's not. It's singular. But it does a really good job of hiding its singularity because it can hide it through all these, behind all these faces. It looks so different in these vocal instruments that sound so different, yeah? And these life streams and experiences that look so different and appear so different. So it hides very well, very, very well. But what happens when humans experience some kind of trauma together collectively is it brings out in the collective the exact things where they are unified. You know, you see that in the hurricanes that have happened, and any major, any kind of disaster, whether it was man-made or an act of nature, you see it. In trauma, in times of severe, you know, pick a word. Severe, it's like I lost the word. We'll say trauma, disaster. Humans come together from their hearts. They just do, right? Now that's not to say some humans don't go off, you know, there's always the looters and there's always like all of that stuff that happens. But the people who their consciousness level is ready, they can experience amazing shifting through just this kind of thing that happens in a way that they never could have otherwise, right? Let's say you live a very solitary kind of life. You lived down in New Orleans before Katrina and you just kind of lived life and like that was it, right? So it's time, let's say, for your next major initiation. Maybe for you, the only way that was going to happen was because of Katrina. Because it forced you into a situation where you had to make choices. And it gave you the opportunity to make choices from your heart or to make choices out of fear. So maybe you jumped into, even though I don't normally have a lot to do with people, but I have a boat and I jumped in it and I, you know, spent all my time rescuing people, rescuing animals, right? Being of selfless service. And you just passed your next initiation. See, there's so much going on in the world. And as a collective, we look at these events and we're like, oh, it's so terrible. It's not. Everything has a divine purpose, absolutely everything, right? And the amount of, I mean, just look at it, something like Katrina happens and look at the coming together globally that we experience because you find yourself or, you know, something happens in London. And we're here in America, but our thoughts and our prayers go out to the people affected in that other part of the world. We don't need to know them, do we? But there's that part of us, and it's so true of anyone who would listen to this. There's that part of us that knows that we are connected with them. And of course, we don't want to see people suffer. And compassion is the highest, highest human emotion. And no true advanced seeker functions without compassion. I don't care who you talk to or are listening to, someone walking around saying they're all enlightened. If they don't function from a space of compassion, for humanity or for our animal kingdom or for the natural world, they're not what they think they are. Because within watching the destruction here and all of the things that are going on that this lower mind has created for us as a collective, it's heartbreaking. It is heartbreaking. And you can allow yourself to feel that. You're not wrong for it, right? We're not there to attach to it, but that doesn't mean don't experience it. It doesn't mean don't feel it. This is a really important point, because I think what happens to a lot of people who do start their spiritual journey, and I've watched it. I've watched certain seekers who really were very far along in their work move into a space of such a lack of compassion. It was just absolutely shocking. Well, you know, whatever happened, they must have, it was just karmic for them anyway. So that's, you know, it's fine. Really? Can that be true? Well, of course it's true. But where is your compassion? Yeah? You want to see people suffer? If you were the one suffering, would you want someone to hold the same attitude toward you? Ha, you asked for it. Right? Well, of course not. We're here to love each other, not dismiss each other and say it's your own damn fault because you're the one who carried that karma forward. If we're all interconnected, how is that helping anything? Right? You see, the only way that works is if you still hold everything as separate. Well, you know, you had that whole karmic thing that you did there, and so you had to walk through it. Now, you hear the self-righteousness in that? It says that I've got my stuff together. You got some work to do. You do your work. Please. It's ridiculous. Kellyanne, we still good time-wise? Yeah? Okay. What do we have roughly, just so I have 10 minutes? Really? Wow. Usually I keep talking and you can't shut me up and then you're cutting me off. All right. Does anyone have a question at all? Yes, no? Well, you know what that means. It means I have to make PLN ask me another question.
Oh, come on, people.
I had to put PLN on the spot.
All right.
Can I say something real quick?
Of course. Absolutely.
Hi. I'm like, did I do it right? I don't know what I'm doing with this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, trying to remember all of it. So, of course, I feel like with all satsangs, which of course I've missed quite a few, so I haven't felt this in a long time where it just feels like you're talking to me, and especially like with just the screen and I don't see everybody else, like it's like it's just us. So it's so funny, like everything that you said, I'm like, yeah, that's exactly, you're talking to me, right? Which is ridiculous. But anyway, but I just wanted to say, like, going back to what you were saying in the beginning about, you know, just thinking about where you are in the work, and do you have time? And I just wanted to say that a similar thought to that is what actually brought me back to the work. Because I was outside of work and I was just sitting there and I was just very in it. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of zoned out for a little bit and that was the thought that came to me, was if I died right now, am I okay with where I am? Mm. Am I at peace? Whatever that means. Am I at peace? Like what would I feel like is unfinished? Are the things that I'm stressing about going to matter in that moment? Is that last thought going to be, did I pay the mortgage, or who's going to pay the mortgage? Right. Or is it going to be a feeling of contentment or happiness or, oh shit, or you know what I mean? And I kind of use that thought process, I guess, to kind of recenter me when things got crazy, which they've been extremely crazy lately, is when I would get really wound up and in it. It's like, that would be the thought is like, and I was talking to my husband about it, and he of course made a Johnny Cash reference that from Walk the Line, where it was like, if you were laying in a ditch dying, what would be the last song you would sing? You gotta like do it from your soul. And so he's like, if you were lying in a ditch dying, like what would be your song? What was important to you? Mm-hmm. And so when I get in it so much, that's the thought that comes, is if this was it right now, mm-hmm. right now, we just cut it off right now. Mm-hmm. Are you okay with that? And if the answer is not absolutely yes, I'm completely at peace with this, then I have work to do. And of course I have a lot of work to do. So I just wanted to say that I thought that was interesting, that I'm like, it's been a while since I've had that feeling of like, oh God, she's talking to me, and not to a group of people. And then the other thing I was going to say is, I thought it was interesting, you're talking about contemplation. I was actually talking to Solomon last night about contemplation. We kind of got into that space just laying on the couch and listening to music. And I made a comment about just laying there in contemplation. And he's like, what does that mean? And I'm like, how do you explain contemplation to a 6-year-old? and then I'm like, well, do I fully understand contemplation? So then I start spiraling about that. but it was just a really interesting experience, because he doesn't have that yet. Mm-hmm. So to even like give it a name, or to try and mm-hmm. teach him that, it's not a thing that he has. So that's always kind of an interesting perspective as well. Just
it is, but how, you know, kids will snap you out. He has it more than we give him credit for.
Sure.
Because every child innate in them is the contemplative factor. You know, a child will just lay in the grass and look up at the sky and contemplate the sky, won't they?
Sure.
They may not have all the verbiage that we
right.
do, but it's not that contemplation isn't occurring. So yeah, the tough part is trying to make him understand it, because you're using words. How do I make you understand what you're already doing? Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's great. So it's an interesting, I like the Johnny Cash reference, I have to say. I think that's fabulous, and I commend him for that. So I've heard someone actually asked me once, and I thought this was brilliant. So I'll start with you. We'll go through the few of us here tonight and have each of you answer the question, because it'll be interesting. If you knew that you had 10 minutes left to live, right? 10 minutes, what would be the most important thing to you that you say to whomever it may be? Let's just say to the world. Say to the world, say to your loved ones, say to whatever. But you going out, 10 minutes left, sitting here right now, would be the most important thing that you would want to get through to whomever. So, Pujana, we'll just start with you, since you were just on with us. Ah.
I just got really emotional. What would I say? I don't know that I would want to say anything except, I don't know, the only thing that comes to mind is, I love you.
Mm, beautiful. Beautiful. No matter who it was, huh? Yeah. Fabulous. Pielian, how about you?
I think for me, it would be to just reiterate to everyone that we are one, we are interconnected, interrelated, and interdependent.
Beautiful. Linda, I know we can't hear you. We'll try. She's talking. Can't hear you. Can't hear you. Okay, Linda, you had to put this on your task list for the week. You have to figure out. But if you want to type it in, then I'll read it after we have Rashonda go. Okay, Rashonda, how about you? 10 minutes left.
Yeah, it would be, I love you. Love you all. And peace on earth and goodwill towards all men.
Beautiful. That's fabulous. Fabulous. All right. And Linda is typing, so I will read hers. Oh, she says, I would say I love you and I want you to find peace in your heart. That's fabulous. So when the question was asked of me, if you had 10 minutes left, my answer was very simple. And it was so, there was just no question. Like, it wasn't even like I had to sit and look at, well, what would I really say, right? It's so, I mean, I would figure out a way in 10 minutes to blast myself across as much of the world as I possibly could, or I'd put someone in charge of making sure it got out. But it was so clear to me that the only thing I would want in my last 10 minutes is just to say that separation never happened. It never happened. You are as one with your creator as you have ever been. You are beginningless, endless, formless, single, being, knowledge, and bliss. You are the eternal. And that's it. What a good thing to go out on tonight, huh? All right. So thank you all so much for being with us for Satsang, and we'll be back with you next week. So much love. Good night.
You are divine.